but try to understand, try to understand, try, try, try to understand. I'm a magic man. Oh, Annie, dreamboat Annie, ship of dreams.
Real first to see two women who were not just the ornaments, but the writers and the singers and the players too. And I think, if anything, that it did for other women in the biz, it gave them a lot of encouragement and a lot of hope.
Hello, baby. I'm Ann Wilson of Heart.
Hello, this is Nancy Wilson of Heart in the studio for Dreamboat Annie.
There had always been a place for women in rock and roll, but far too often that place was in the background. Certainly there had been some significant exceptions. We're talking Janis Joplin, for instance, and Grace Slick of the Jefferson Airplane. But it really wasn't until 1976 and the release of Heart's Dreamboat Annie that a rock band led by women was able to achieve widespread commercial success. The focal point of Heart was and still is two sisters from Seattle, Anna and Nancy Wilson, both of whom sang, played guitar, and wrote virtually all of the songs. The other members of the band, including its founder, were men, but there was no question that the soul of Heart was female. Dreamboat Annie was significant for some other reasons as well. It sold millions of copies and was as high as number 4 on the U.S. album charts, even though it was released by a tiny independent label from Vancouver called Mushroom Records. Dreamboat Annie was also one of the few albums that managed to successfully run the gamut from gentle acoustic ballads to hard-driving rockers. In a time when disco was the dominant sound on the radio, Dreamboat Annie blew in like a fresh sea breeze. Anna Nancy Wilson's father was a Marine Corps captain, so the family was constantly on the move, living on military bases in California, Taiwan, and Panama before finally settling in Seattle. The transient nature of their childhood certainly tightened the bond between big sister Anne and the younger Nancy. The Wilson sisters were together constantly, dreaming about what they'd be when they grew up. First, Nancy Wilson of Heart in the studio.
We had huge plans from the very beginning, especially when the real catalyst was the Beatles. And when we heard the Beatles on the radio and saw them and all the media hype about them, we just had to get guitars immediately and learn Beatles songs and be like the Beatles. And we started forming groups then. And I think I was probably about 9 or 10. And we even started trying to write our own songs that were kind of like Bob Dylan and kind of like the Beatles. And we just had this "we're going to make it" attitude from the time we were really young. And it was really fun because it was so unrealistic then. You know, we never would have dreamed what we had to go through after that to really do what we wanted to do. But it was great. You know, we were like a lot of people when they're younger and they're learning how to play guitar and they're, you know, practicing in front of the mirrors and turning the lights around and make spotlights and lip-syncing to the Beatles records and, you know, the whole thing.
Big sister, lead singer Ann Wilson of Heart.
Nancy and I always played together as kids, and we played folk music. We had groups of our own, you know, lots of them. But then, like, when I fell in love with this man and I split off from her and went away, I got in rock bands. But there was always an open invitation to her from me, like, let's play together again. This is a lifelong thing. This is a lifelong career thing here. It's like you and me, you know. And but she was 13, so she couldn't go into clubs. And so it was just like she was protected by nature from playing with me for a while.
Like he knew me, he looked right through me. getting up in a hurry. Yeah. Come on home, girl. Mama cried on the phone. Too soon to lose my baby, and my girl should be at home. But try to understand. Try to understand. He's a magic man, Mama.
First album in 1976, Dreamboat Annie, Magic Man is an autobiographical song for Heart lead singer Ann Wilson, according to younger sister Nancy.
That's a real reflection of what Ann especially was going through at that time, because she was in love deeply with a guy named Mike Fisher, who was our then manager and sound man for live shows. She was really writing the song about when the teenage girl leaves home for the man she loves, or the guy she loves. And, you know, how that feels in that kind of leaving home thing that happens between a girl and her mother. Like, throw caution to the wind and follow this guy. That's what she did in real life. She took her guitar, packed a bag, hitchhiked up to Vancouver to be with this guy. And they turned her away at the border because something wasn't together with her papers, and so he had to come down and get her. Oh, because she wasn't allowed to hitchhike through. So, I mean, she really had that much love, you know, that she followed that strongly to do something that's scary.
As Anne entered high school in Seattle, she started singing with various local bands. This was the first time the Wilson sisters had been separated musically. So I asked younger sister Nancy how she took it.
Oh, it broke my heart. I wasn't old enough yet. She was like 18. I guess I was 16 or so. Actually, it was younger than that she started playing like high school dances with high school guys. So it was really hard for me just to... I was really jealous, you know, because they had electric guitars and I didn't, and things like microphones and things like PAs and columns. But my mom and dad said, absolutely not.
The band that older sister Anne eventually stayed with, including bass player Steve Fawson, guitarist Roger Fisher, and his brother Mike, who became the band's manager and sound engineer. Anne Wilson says that the band name was actually White Heart.
Actually, Heart is a very old name. Like, Heart was around in Seattle from about 1967 on, but I didn't join until about 70. And it was like the best club band in town, you know, and for a while, and it's got a long history. But in 70, I joined, and we changed the name for a while because we wanted to be more psychedelic, you know. So it was Hocus Pocus. Around that time, I fell in love with a man who was Mike Fisher, who didn't want to go to Vietnam and didn't want to kill people and didn't want to be killed, you know. So we went to Canada and took Hocus Pocus up there. And he and I just, like, began the band up there with his brother Roger. Then we eventually changed the name back to Heart because Heart was stenciled on all the road cases.
Heading out this morning into the sun, riding on the diamond waves, little darling one. Warm wind caress her lover it seems. Oh, any dreamboat, any ship of dreams. Ooh, any dreamboat, any ship of dreams.
It's important to note that Anne Wilson was in Heart for 4 years before younger sister Nancy joined. It was during those years that Anne really developed into a great rock singer.
We were constantly gigging. We were like a very hungry, like a fire in the belly type band. Like, we gotta play, let's play, let's play. And we were a club band. And we played all the cabarets around the Vancouver area. We broke out into Alberta, even into Saskatchewan. And when the war was finally over and we got to come back down here, we played Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana. It wasn't until the first album came out that we were able to hit the rest of the country. But at first it was very much like a drive yourself, load your own gear, two vans, you know, a working band, a very down-to-earth garage band. And one hell of a garage band it was. But like my role was, at first, was like the chick singer. And I was not the lead singer, I was just one of the singers. I gradually was kind of pushed into the front position.
Yeah.
on You came from Heart's debut, Dreamboat Annie.
That still is a really cool song. When I hear it today, I really, it sounds like the 70s to me, but it still has that emotional thread that really pulls all the way through the song. That was another song that Anne wrote all the lyrics to before we did it, and it was the idea for the music that we had was to do a sort of like a Moody Blues song called Question. Why do we never get an answer, you know? And with that kind of acoustic guitar all the way through, and that kind of like big energy just careening through space, you know, that kind of thing. And actually, when she was writing the lyrics, I was really very sick with a real high fever. And she brought it into me and showed me the lyrics, and like I immediately started to get better, you know. It was great.
Up next, little sister Nancy heads off to college, but the lure of those childhood dreams of making music with her big sister will prove to be a siren song. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Ann and Nancy Wilson for the anniversary of the landmark Heart debut, Dreamboat Annie.
Hello, and welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ann Wilson of Heart.
Thanks, Ann. I'm Redbeard with the anniversary of the debut Heart album, Dreamboat Annie, released in 1976. While Big Sister Ann was belting out rock in the West Canadian provinces with Heart, Nancy was in college in the Seattle area with a bit of a budding folk career starting.
Well, a bit is the right way to put it. A very little, tiny, minuscule bit of an acoustic type career going. I made enough money to buy a guitar. But I was going to college for a couple of years and studying lots of English literature and romantic writing and poetry. And so I think it was good, you know. By the time I went to college, I could have joined Heart at any time, because they were already a top cabaret band up in Vancouver, B.C. then. I would actually sort of join. I was sort of half in Heart for a while. I was in Heart during the summers, and then I would go back to school in the fall and go up for weekends and, you know, sing with them on the weekends and, you know, go back to school. So I was had both feet on both sides of the line there for a while. But I was like the last daughter leaving the nest, right, in the family. So our parents were really like going to be really disappointed if one of us didn't try out college. So I tried it out, and then I dropped out. Well, actually, I was actually really glad that I did in many ways. It really did help me hone some writing skills that I later brought into the band for, you know, lyrics and things like that.
Nancy Wilson was asked to join Heart in 1974 after sitting in with the band on weekends and between semesters. Lead singer Ann Wilson remembers.
It happened on the phone. It was like, please come, please come, please come. And finally she gave in. She went to college for a while and played folk music by herself in lounges and stuff. And she just eventually realized she was drawn back to the Wilson womb, like back to me. I mean, the gravity was so strong to play with me and me with her that she went bang, and we ended up together again. She first joined the band like on a trial basis. She would sit in for like 3 or 4 songs a night to see how she liked, you know, and she'd play the acoustic guitar, because I was playing the acoustic guitar in the band up till the time she joined.
Nevertheless, Nancy Wilson did have some fears about joining Heart at the time.
I was a little bit afraid of the life that they were leading. Basically, stone broke life. Anne was up there in Vancouver. They were all living in a big communal house. They were all living off the famous 20-pound sack of brown rice. They were just making enough just for gas and food, basically, if that. So it was really a very tough time for Anne. And I knew I was going to join the band. I think I just dragged my feet because I needed to. One of the other main reasons for me was I needed to establish myself as kind of an independent person from Anne. Because being the younger one, I've always been in the shadow and followed her lead always, and still do. But largely it was a great chance for me to step away and get my own identity together as an acoustic guitar player and have some kind of a bit of success on my own.
And according to older sister Anne, this was not easy on Mrs. Wilson.
Basically she went, and back then, they were like the papers were full of horror stories about rock and roll players, and they jump out of windows on LSD, you know, like they think they can fly. It was the worst, most backward time. And so she was pretty afraid, and she did try and talk us both out of it, but I was already out of her reach, and Nancy slipped out of her grasp too. But now they're way behind us. I mean, now they've seen that we're not going to be no fool, and not die, not kill ourselves, not jump out of a window, just play music.
Here's lead guitarist Nancy Wilson.
We were really searching for a title, and we were still recording. Anne just had the idea of calling it Dreamboat Annie. Of course, not about myself, she says. Which I still, you know, it's true. It's not really about Anne, but it's about, I don't know, there's that theme that comes up in a lot of our songs, like Baby Lestrange and Little Queen, and it's a character that sort of grows up through our albums, which sort of represents us, but is not necessarily Anne. In Vancouver, I mean, and as well as a lot of places, it's a hard-drinking audience. It's a partying place, Vancouver. And they love their beer, you know? It was always a big party, but a lot of bartenders would come up to me after a set and would say, maybe you should, like stop looking at your feet, you know? Like, put your chin up so we can see your face once in a while. That might help. And so I started to, you know, take a lot of direction that way. But I always was behind Anne. I mean, I was always standing, sort of crowding in the back there for a while. You know, it was just a lot to get used to in about 6 months' time.
So when blonde-haired electric guitarist Nancy joined brunette lead singer Anne, Heart became a new kind of rock and roll band. And in the mid-70s, Ann Wilson says that in itself was enough to draw a crowd.
It was like, if there are 10 bands, like, up against a wall, and one band has two women, which one are you going to go see, you know? That helped us a lot, especially down here, because America is so much more flashy. Like, hey, two chicks, and they've got cleavage, you know? let's go see them. We didn't try for that, but it just happened that way, you know? We didn't try to unbutton our shirts, okay? They just fell open.
Yeah.
Lightning and Wine from Dreamboat Annie and Hart. Next, Dreamboat Annie becomes the Cinderella story of the 70s. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Ann and Nancy Wilson for the anniversary of Hart's Dreamboat Annie.
Hi, this is Nancy Wilson of Hart, and we're in the studio for Dreamboat Annie.
And I'm Redbeard on the anniversary of this legendary debut by Hart. Through much of 1975, Mike Fisher and Ann Wilson took tapes of Hart's club act around to major record labels, trying to get them signed. No one was interested until they arrived at a tiny company called Mushroom Records in Vancouver, British Columbia. But even though some company had finally taken the bait, there was a hook embedded in it, according to Nancy Wilson.
Interestingly enough, the first time that Mushroom came to us was just to sign Anne. They didn't want anyone else in the band. And Anne, being the great person that she is, said, She turned down fame and fortune, supposedly, for being in a band. And that's a really great thing about this band. It's always been a band. You know, even with a few personnel changes in the lineup, it always has been a band. And I'm really glad she made that decision. Because, you know, I'm still here today.
Today, it turned around. Tiny life ain't been strangled after all. Time, 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 never ask what's become of us. Just dedicate your sorrow here and now. Hey!
ocean hold me to you. Come on, rock me on the waves. Tell me, is it all true?
At first, the Dreamboat Annie album was only released in Western Canada, selling 30,000 copies. Then they got distribution across the border in Seattle, where it sold another 25,000 copies almost instantly. By the summer of 1976, Little Mushroom Records was able to make Hart's Dreamboat Annie available nationwide in the U.S., eventually selling almost 3 million copies just in the 70s alone. Again, Nancy Wilson of Hart.
We released it regionally from Vancouver down and regions of the United States. We basically worked the record manually, region by region, by going to these places and driving to all the radio stations personally and, you know, giving them their copies and their T-shirts and their necklaces and their pins and, you know, ashtrays and stuff. We really, you know, like they say, used up a lot of shoe leather on this on that record. But it took a while to get started, region by region.
Ann Wilson says it turned out to be the world's biggest Kool-Aid stand.
Oh, God, America was the last to fall. We were like strictly a Canadian thing for a long time. Mushroom was so small, they had no money behind them. They were not a big strong-arm label, so we had to go out through the country and almost sell our albums at the shows. It was like a ma-and-pa business.
Looking back now 35 years on that remarkable debut, Dreamboat Annie's multi-million-selling success on a tiny indie label with a rock band led by two women was a real-life Cinderella story. But how did success affect Hart? First, here's Anne, followed by Nancy Wilson with me in the studio.
The size of the halls is probably not the biggest adjustment that you have to make personally. I think the biggest one is just all of a sudden you hear people talking about you, like record people refer to you not as a person anymore, but rather as we. You know, everyone goes, well, we're going to play this hall and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. It's not Ann and Nancy anymore. It's we. You become part of this big group that moves around the country like a big amoeba, you know, and just... So that was a big adjustment from personalness to being part of a group, really. The size of the halls, I think, when you walk out there in front of 10,000 people and it's someone else's audience, like say you're warming up for Loggins and Messina and the place is packed, you kind of take with a grain of salt, like, well, it's their audience. It's kind of hard because they're waiting for Loggins and Messina, so they're going, come on, come on, come on, come on, hurry up. And as a lead singer, I learned not to say, you know, not to say, well, this is going to be our last song, because they go, yeah, you know. So there were those kinds of adjustments, you know.
But, you know, being out there for the first time on those bigger stages where you weren't like shoulder to shoulder on a club cabaret stage or something was pretty great, you know, because it was definitely a million thrills to walk out on a big, you know, get some big boards under your feet, you know.
And you only have to play like 45 minutes.
Yeah. Of course, we didn't have that much material after Dreamboat Annie. We did do like a long guitar solo and a long
We stopped doing the Led Zeppelin medley.
Drum solo and stuff. But we were received fairly well, depending on the region we were in. But, you know, being out on those big stages, it was like, well, God, I guess I can move around now, you know?
Yeah.
Great.
And what about the practical part of touring North America to support the runaway success of Dreamboat Annie back then? Before, after a gig in a club, everybody goes home to their apartments, but a touring band drives, eats, and sleeps together for months at a time. And there were two ladies in the one dressing room every night. Nancy Wilson is first.
We worked it out.
Yeah.
Well, we were staying with a couple of the guys in the band at the time. We were having romances within the band. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were, at least we had that kind of security with us, because it really was like being thrown, well, it was a test of fire, you know, having that much success that soon for the very first album in our career. So we had to really, I think it was a really good thing. It was built in for us to have that security and someone to go back to your room with and, you know, walk outside at night with and escorts.
Or not.
Yeah. Well, as it turned out later, you know, but at the time, I think it was a really good thing.
Yeah.
And I asked the Wilson sisters if Dreamboat Annie had been conceived and released a decade later, when MTV video was so pervasive in the popularity of contemporary music, if it would have developed in the same way, or if the band would have thought differently about their follow-up album. Nancy Wilson responded first.
You know, that's a really good question. I think the whole flavor of that era, even if it did have an MTV going for it at the time, would have been a whole lot different than it is now, even if that had opened up then. Because, you know, that was right after the 60s, and either it was disco or it was like kind of like the Yes era. I kind of call it the Yes era, where rock and roll was allowed to really expand. You know, you'd have 5-minute songs, and Pink Floyd, you know, you have 4 songs on a double album, you know. So I think video would have done well at that time. I think it was a very experimental time for
it. Would have been way different videos, though, not
yeah.
the quick edits.
Exactly.
Because I think there was an attention span thing.
That's right. I think the
going on then.
Attention span would have been a lot longer, a lot more involved. It would have been a little more even artistic, maybe even to a fault. I mean, you listen to some of that stuff now, and it's a little windy, perhaps. You know, a
yeah.
little bit self glorifying, but
Siberian Katru,
yeah, you know, but I think, you know, I don't think it would have changed. I think it might have even given it more an identity than it actually ended up having.
Heading out this morning into the sun, riding on the diamond waves, little darling one.
We were just really conscious of trying to follow Dreamboat Annie because the amount of notoriety that was thrown at us was almost too much for us to handle. And it really had us out of balance, you know. So we were saying, well, we got to measure up to ourselves, which is the weirdest thing to have to think about in the world. I think that we pretty much did it, you know. But nothing's ever going to be as good as the first outing where you cut the cord, you know, like it's never going to be quite the same with the second album, with the follow-up album.
Sad faces painted over with those magazine smiles, heading out to somewhere, won't be back. Thank you.
This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guests, Ann Wilson and Nancy, too. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.